Rabosa, I'd like to start the ninth perek of Bava Kamma.
What you said?
That's Hagozel Eitzim. I'm not going to try to fool you and tell you it's easy, but let me just give a short introduction to this perek, and that is that although we touched on the laws of theft in the previous chapter, which was Perek HaChovel, the eighth chapter. However, we really were focused on the laws of a ganav and the chiyuv of dalet v'heh. You know, if the ganav goes ahead and he shechts the animal or he sells it and so forth and so on. Now we're focused on a gazlan. A gazlan, as opposed to a ganav, who steals boldly, you know, in the light of day, sunshine, you know, it's not inhibited whatsoever. So he doesn't have those extra penalties that a ganav has. And basically his obligation comes under two paragraphs. Paragraph number one is called Veheshiv Esagzela Asher Gozal. He's obligated to return the stolen object. Asher Gozal, as he stole it, meaning in the same state as when it was, as it existed when he stole it. That's number one. Number two, and this is the second dimension. Did I start too early?
No.
I don't know. It depends on what clock. What it says on Big Ben, you know. I don't know. So perhaps we can just close the door. Now the second dimension is, what happens if the stolen object is gone? In the classical case, it was destroyed. And it no longer exists. It's not in the world anymore. That would be a classical extreme case. So then, the gazlan fulfills his obligation of Veheshiv Esagzela Asher Gozal in a different way. What does he do now, Rabosa? He can't return the object because it's gone. It's been destroyed. He pays. He writes these, in my language, I'm going to just, if you want to get used to my language, he writes a check. Okay, that's going to be my language. Now, in between A and B, there's A plus, B plus, somewhere in the middle. Mitch, we have a chair for you here. And that is, what happens if on the one hand, the stolen object is in the world, right? It does exist. But it doesn't exist in the same state as it was in at the time that he stole it. And that's called Shinui. Shin, Yud, Nun, Vav, Yud. Shinui. In other words, the object in its structure has been altered. Okay, and that is one of the most important topics of this perek, of the ninth perek. What happens in the case where Reuven steals something from Shimon and he changes the object? Does it fit into the first category, namely return the object, because the object still exists? Or does it fit into the second category of the object doesn't exist? Because it's a funny kind of Twilight Zone. On the one hand, it does exist, but on the other hand, not in the same state as when he stole. That's going to be the sugya called Shinu. And again, just an emotional intuitive response here. It's very odd to me, and I've learned this many times, but I still find it unsettling, that there's something called kinyan gzeila, that a gazlan could actually acquire ownership of the object. But that is the yisoda yisodos of everything that we've been discussing until now. And the question becomes, does Shinui, and when does Shinui become a mode or a form of acquisition of Kinyan? Normally, when we understand a Kinyan, there's something called Das Makne. If I own an object, I give you my Das, and now we can embark on a Maisa Kinyan. Here, it's a solo Maisa Kinyan without Das Makne. So that Kinyan called Kinyan Shinui, which reflects a Gazlan, has to be understood. Now, the other chapter, the other part of this chapter, is dedicated to a different subject, and that is what's called a gazlan that was sued in a court of law, and he took the oath, and he was nishba l'sheker, and then he confesses his guilt. And that's called something like Toein Tainas Ganav Pikadon. We've touched on this, but we haven't gotten into the case of Toein Tainas Gazlan B'Pikadon. And in a case where, had he admitted that he was a Gazlan, he would have to pay, and he refused to admit that he was a Gazlan. And in such a case, he has to take a Shvua under certain conditions. And he took a false oath. What are the dinim that apply if later on he wants to do tshuva and confess his guilt? And the last chapter, the last subject of this chapter is what's called Gezel Hager, which means that if you steal something from a convert and then the convert dies, how then do you fulfill the mitzvah of Heshuvas HaGzela? Because the ger in this case has no children, let's say he was never married, and there are no relatives to inherit it, because any of his biological relatives is ger, shen is gai, kakot, and shenol adam, you're no longer related to him. Our Mishnah, and now we get into our Mishnah, is going to focus on the concept of shinui, in which a gazlan is kona b'shinui, and the issue is what constitutes a shinui. Now, the basis for this halacha of kinyan shinui is the two words, the extra superfluous two words in the pasuk veheshiv is like zela asher gazal. And what is asher gazal adding? Ke'ein shegazal. If the object is still in the same state that it was in when he stole it, then and only then is he obligated to return the object. If the object has changed, it's transformed its very being, its molecular structure, we'll say, then in such a case, he's not chayav in hashava, but then v'heishiv, it's like zela, turns into damim, now he has to pay its value. And the Mishnah is going to tell us two things. Number one, the Mishnah is going to teach us, just by way of introduction, that if there's a shinui, the gazlan is kona, the object b'shinui. Correct, and then he pays damim. And then the Mishnah is going to tell us another chiddush, and that is that how much damim, how do we evaluate the stolen object? Because every object, as you and I know, can fluctuate due to market fluctuations. Its value could go up, it could go down. So I steal a cow on the first of the month. There are plenty of cows out there on the market. Then all the cow buyers have cleaned out all the cows, and by the end of the month, you know, you can't find a cow without finding some seller out in Yehupitzville. So of course he's going to jack up the price, or it could go the other way around. You know, there was a dearth of cows on the market. The price was very high, but now all of a sudden they imported Chinese cows. You know, and the price of the cow went down. You know, so what do you pay? And the Mishnah is going to establish that you pay kishas hagzil. You know, it's as if you take a snapshot of the object as it were stolen at the moment that he stole it and its value, and we're going to determine in Bezdin that value. That's what the ganav is going to pay. Now, why does the ganav return the object itself? The answer is because of shinui, and that's really the main breakthrough of this mission. Okay, without further ado, hagozel etzim va'ason kelim. He stole wood and he built some sort of utensil with the stolen wood, correct? Is there an extra Gemara floating around? Oh, here's an extra Gemara. So you don't have to... Okay then. So we're on daf, Tzadi Gimel Amid Beis. Tzemer v'ason begadim. He stole wool and he wove it into a garment. Is Mishalem Kishas Hagzela. He doesn't pay by returning the object. That would be always the simplest opportunity, but now he doesn't have to return the object. Why doesn't he have to return the object? Shinu. He was Kona B'Shinu. Is Gazlan Kona B'Shinu. And the Mishnah, the underlying Chiddush of the Mishnah is not only Shinu, but that this itself constitutes a Shinu. Because let's say if I steal wood and I made this table out of it, I can theoretically take apart the table. You know, there are screws and hinges and whatnot, and I can loosen them up and return the wood, which is called a shinui achozel libriyaso, meaning it's a reversible shinui. But this Mishnah doesn't make any distinctions between shinui A or shinui B. As long as you change the structure of the object, then that's called kinyan shinui. So in the case, again, of Eitzim, Asan Kalim, he made him into Kalim. Case of Tzemer, he made it into Begod. Fine, that's what we have so far. Now, when it says here, Mishalem Kishas Hagzela, I just want to point out something that might be interesting here. The Mishnah is going to elaborate and demonstrate that Kishas Hagzela, in the case of a stolen cow, which is the next case that we're dealing with, until now he's been stealing wood and wool, but now he's going to steal a cow in the next case of the Mishnah. The value of a cow is very interesting. So let's say I'm not referring to anyone in particular, but if you decide to steal a cow, and there are a couple of candidates, you know, but you only have room in your truck for one cow. Okay, which cow would be the best cow to steal? The pregnant cow. Make sure to steal the pregnant cow. Why? Because crime pays. And crime pays means that if you steal a pregnant cow, you don't have to return the calf when it's born. So let me give the following example. I don't know, you know, I'm just making numbers up out of my head. Let's say a cow, a classical Elsie the cow, that's not pregnant, we'll call it the empty cow. Right, its uterus is empty. It's worth $500, right? A pregnant cow is worth $600 because I'm waiting for the birth of the calf. The calf itself, once it's born and standing on four legs, is worth $200. So crime pays. What do I mean crime pays? Because what he stole is a cow. A pregnant cow, but a cow. Now he has a cow plus a calf. He doesn't have to return the calf. Why doesn't he have to return the calf? Because that's not Ve'eshev Zagzeh Lasher Gazal. He never stole a calf. Meaning, although the fetus was there, if there's such a word in cows, I don't know, I'm not a farmer, but let's call it a fetus for lack of a better word. If anyone wants to give me the right English, please feel free to do so and I'll appreciate it. So he stole a fetus. Now he's got a calf. You know, it's a viable being that lives and breathes and thrives in 4 feet. So since he never stole a calf, he doesn't have to return a calf. So crime pays. Why? Because the Mishnah is going to say he pays the value of the cow. Now let's see what that means. The cow, as a pregnant cow, again, if we take a snapshot of the moment that he stole it, is worth how much?
$600.
Okay. So he has to pay $600. But now he's got a cow, right? The Elsie, the cow, with an empty cow. Plus he's got the calf. The empty cow sells for $5. The calf sells for $2. So he's got two. He's got now $7. He just made a profit of 100 shekel, or $100, whatever you want. In other words, the check that he signs only has 100 on it. So let's say, for example, again, I'm not sure what I'm telling you now is right. He returns the cow, albeit not the pregnant cow, because the pregnant cow already gave birth, but he returns the cow. The cow is worth 500. Now he has to make up the difference between a pregnant cow and a regular cow. That's going to be a check of 100. But nevertheless, He still has a calf. So even after he wrote a check for 100, he's the proud owner of a calf that sells on the market for 200. Crime pays. So that's why I tell you, Rabosai, be careful. The next time you steal a cow, make sure it's a pregnant cow. Now, this is the shita, as I presented to you, of Rov Rishonim. The exception is the Rush. If we get a chance, Belinda will go through the Rush inside. The Rush has a pretty radical shita, and perhaps before him came the Balamor, Rabbi Mizrahi Alevi, and the Malamar wants to say, listen to this, that in the case where a gazlan steals a pregnant cow and the cow gives birth, the gazlan writes a check for 600 and he doesn't return the cow. Now crime pays in two ways. Not only does he have a calf with a plus of 100, he also is the proud owner of a cow. Why? Because the Baal Amar and the Rosh are of the opinion that there's a shinui here, not just on the calf, because it was a fetus and now it's a live, viable being, but there's a shinui on the cow itself. Pili Plyim. The cow itself is no longer the same cow that he stole. There are two categories of cows. There's a pregnant cow and an empty cow. And never the twain shall meet. There's no overlap. So here we have a machlokus between Rashi and all the Rishonim on the one side, and the Baal Amar and the Rosh on the other side. Rashi and the Rishonim understand that he returns the cow. He was not kona the guf hapara with shinui, because a par is a par is a par, whether it's empty or pregnant. But he now has to make up the difference in hard currency between a pregnant cow and an empty cow, which is to the tune of 100. The calf, for sure there was a shinui. So nobody denies that as far as the calf is concerned, he did not steal a calf. But did he steal an empty cow? Says Rashi and Rishonim, yes. He stole an empty cow that it also happens to be pregnant. But that doesn't change the very essence of the cow. The cow still exists. He returns the cow under the halach of Haitians like Zeila Shar Gozal. He now has to make up the difference between the value of the cow that he stole and the cow that he's returning. And that difference is paid in Dmei, in Damim. But he cannot keep the cow. He's got to return the cow. He can only keep the calf. He ends up again with the same profit of 100 as the Baal Amar. The Baal Amar says he can keep the cow and the calf, the total value of which is 700, but he's got to pay and sign a check for 600. Why? Because the Baal Amar is of the opinion that a pregnant cow is not the same as an empty cow. And he was kona even the cow itself with a kinyan in a kinyan sheep. So far, so good. So let's read the next part of the Mishnah. Hagozel para. Gozel para mu'uberes v'yolda. He stole, in this case, a pregnant cow and it gave birth. Rachel te'una. A Rachel, which I think is a sheep, a young sheep. And it's got wool on it. Right? Ugzaza. And now the gazlan shears the wool. Now, what would you pay more for? A sheep with once its wool was sheared, or a sheep that has the wool on its back? Obviously, when it has the wool on its back. So again, we'll use the same paradigm. If you stole a sheep with wool on it, then you've stolen something to the value, the tune of 600. If, on the other hand, you stole a sheep without any wool on it, that's 500. The wool itself sells on the market, after you've done all the efforts and the process of shearing it, is worth 200. So it's the exact same story as the para muberes, mishalim dmei para homedes lelet. Rabosai. When you read those words, does it sound like Rashi or does it sound like the Baal Amar? There's one word here in the Mishnah which I think, more than anything else, compelled the Baal Amar. Which word? Dmei. The Baal Amar is really the closest, the most loyal of the two Rishonim, the two Shitas, to the Pshuto Shel Mishnah. The Mishnah says he pays Dmei Parah. According to Rashi and all of his cohorts, it should have said Mishalim Para, meaning he's got to return the Par itself. The answer is, but again, it's a little bit of a push here, that according to Rashi, what Dmei Para means, that you evaluate the Dmei Para Mu'uberes, and then based on that evaluation, you'll calculate how much he's going to pay, but he's not going to pay the full 600 and write off a check for 600 the way the Baal Amar understands it, but rather you determine the Dmei Para Mu'uberes is 600. He's not going to actually pay 600. He's going to give him back the Para because there was no Kinyan Shinyan on the Para, and he's going to write a check for 100. Okay, Udmei Rachel Homedes Ligozes. And again, the same story, the Baal Amar is a lot closer to, I think, the simple understanding of the Mishnah. He's paying Dmei Rachel. He's not giving back the Rachel itself. But Rashi's going to insist that Dmei Rachel means that's just a method of evaluating. And once we evaluate, now we can determine what he's going to return to the Gazlan in terms of the object that was stolen. There was no Shinui. And that's with regard to the Rachel. A Rachel is a Rachel is a Rachel, according to Rashi, with Giza on it, without Giza. And he has to make up the difference between the Rachel that he's returning, which is only worth 500, and the Rachel that he stole, which was worth 600. And to make up the differential, he'll write out a check for 100. Now the Mishnah goes on to address the opposite, the reverse case. Supposing he stole an empty para, right? Gazal para vinis abra etzlo. The para became pregnant after the gzela while it was in the domain of the gazlan viyolda, and now the para gave birth to a vlat. Or alternatively, Rachel, there was no shearings, there was no wool on its back, vinitama etzlo, but it produced this growth, this wool, in the reshus of what? Of the gazlan, ugzaz, and then he cut it off. Is mishalem kishas hagzela. Once again, we're not going to penalize the gazlan and jack up the price of the object that he stole, even though today this para is worth 600, not just 500, or the rachel is worth 605. Nevertheless, he doesn't have to pay that full 600. We have a snapshot, as we said before, of what was the value that he stole, and that's what he's going to return. Now, once again, we're going to have the same old machlokes. If we've established, according to the Baal Amar, that a para muberes is a different entity, then you might suggest that he was kohen b'shinui. And here the Mishnah offers an overall arching rule here. Of zeh klal, kol hagazlonim mishalmin kishas hagzela. The Gemara is going to analyze what the Mishnah wanted to add here. And that's what we said at the outset, that the Mishnah wants to tell you that until now we've been discussing shinui, it was pregnant, it wasn't pregnant, etc. What about a case of market price fluctuations? Either it went up in value since the gzela, went down in value since the gzela, and that's going to be the klal here that's adding kishas hagzel. The Gemara says Amri. Amri means that let's analyze this, or they analyze this. You know, some unidentified, anonymous group of scholars, you know, in the yeshiva or whatever, in the base medrash. Gazal, I'm adding the word gazal, eitzim, vasan kelim. The change between A and B, between the state of the chefta gazal as he stole it, at the time that he stole it, and the state of the chefta gazal now, today, under the efforts of the gazlan, is very, very radical. It's minakotza lakotza. He took eitzim, raw materials, and he made them into kelim. In that qualifies as a shinui. But he could have done something that was less radical, less profound, in which the chefza gozel did not undergo such a profound change. And that's called in the Lashon HaShas shifan, otherwise known as shipui. Shipui means to smoothen something. Let's say you have a raw piece of wood, you know, you just cut down the tree, it's full of bark and it's full of, you know, mounds and humps and so forth and so on. You can't use it really in a building in a constructive sense. So what do you have to do? You have to smoothen it out. That's called shipui. So the Gemara posits the following two scenarios. In scenario number one, which is the Mishnah, the gazlan took the object from one extreme to the other, from its raw material state all the way to its final situation as a kli. In another scenario, which apparently the Mishnah is coming to exclude because it doesn't pass the threshold of a shinui, it doesn't qualify as a shinui, he didn't go all that far. There wasn't such a profound difference. He took it from the state of raw to prepare it for building, for construction, by smoothing it down. That's called shipui. But he didn't go all the way to create a kli. If the Mishnah was of the opinion that even shipui that less profound change would qualify as what? As a shinu, then the Mishnah should have told me that chiddush, and I would have known with a kal v'chomer how much more so if he made it a kli out of it. So the Gemara says in, but sheep on low. If he made it into a kli, that's considered a shinu, but not if he smoothed it out and he prepared it for building. Low, that's not called a shinu. So right now the Gemara makes logical sense. The Gemara is going to deduce the same kal v'chomer from the next case in the Mishnah. Tzemer v'ason begadim in. He took a very profound radical change. He took wool, and he made it into a cloth. You know, there was no stopping in some station, way station in the middle. That radical change, menakotza l'kotza, constitutes a shinui. However, Livnon, he prepared it for weaving into a cloth, meaning he made it into, let's say, into clean threads, you know, which can be now used for weaving purposes. That's called Livnon. Livnon means literally to whiten them or to clean them, you know, between... I mean, I'm not a farmer, but I know that between the wool, you'll always see these little stickers, you know, the black, what you'll call them, thistles or whatever. Those have to be removed through a process of combing or cleansing or bleaching. Lo, that would not constitute a shinui. Why? Because basically it still is called tzemer. It hasn't really undergone a radical change in its very essence. So that itself would be fine. You know, the Gemara doesn't seem to have any problem with that. But the problem is with a braisa. Uremini, we have a braisa. Gozal eitzim v'shipon. Avodim v'sititon. Tzemer v'libnon pishton v'nikou. Mishalem kishas hagzela. We have a braisa that in these very two cases and two additional cases establishes that there is a kinyan shinui on the part of the gazlan, and he only pays damim. Now, amongst these two cases are eitzim v'shipon. He didn't make it into a kli. He only smoothed it out. Or, for example, tzemer v'libnam. He didn't make it into a cloth, into a final garment. He only prepared the threads for weaving by cleaning out the dirt and the thistles that are between, you know, hidden between or embedded in between the various pieces of wool. And nevertheless, the braisa says in these two cases that does qualify as a shinui, and mishalim ki shas hagzela. The braisa adds two other cases. If you've ever learned the 12th perek of Shabbos, that's the very, very famous perek of Makeh v'Patish. There's a case where he takes stones from the quarry and he does something called mesates, which means to smoothen out the stones. You know, the Jerusalem stones have jutting out pieces, but most of construction is stones that have been, you know, you cut them down. That's called mesates. They used to have a special kli, the Gemara describes, to do the mesates. And there the sugya vacillates where the mesates is chayav mishum baka v'patish, or maybe it's chayav mishum bone, right? Different malachas in the Torah. And then we finally have the case of pishton v'nikahu. V'nikahu means, I guess, he didn't subject it to a bleaching process, but nevertheless he was able to comb it out, and by combing it he cleansed and prepared the wool for threads. And lo and behold, it is a shinut. So our goal now for the next, 15, 20 minutes, as long as it takes us, is to present two resolutions to reconcile the braisa with our Mishnah. We're going to suggest Abaye and Rav Ashi. There are many other possibilities, which we'll get to way later down the line. Omar Abaye.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
In the case of the material, when you remove the thorns and whatever have you, you're left, most probably, well, it depends on the kind of material it is, but the 50% of what you start off with, because you've taken out all the corsairs,
right,
and all the thistles, so what you're left with is the 50% might be three times as valuable as it was in raw state.
Correct. So he only has to pay the value of the raw state. He can keep the wool for himself. Yeah. The wool is now worth
More,
like whatever. We didn't have such radical changes that you suggest, but it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant.
Be more radical.
And crime pays.
With cashmere, you know, you're left with less than 10% of what you started off with. But the cashmere is 20 times more valuable than the raw material. Because you've rolled it.
Well, the cash that he's paying, it reflects the value of the stolen object.
Cashmere. It's called cashmere.
The cashmere is the crime pays, meaning what the gasoline ends up in his bank account, again, not necessarily his bank account, but in terms of his total assets, is the difference between the raw material and the product that he's produced now.
But he had to do the work.
Yes,
in order to make
for
it
sure,
like that.
For sure.
So one way
it's crime plus work, you know. You know, it's not pure profit. No, you're right. You have to introduce the variable of the work that he puts in. In fact, that's part of the reason why the final product is worth so much more than its raw state, because of the tircha and the manufacturing efforts that you have to put in. But the strange thing is that whereas the Mishnah says that crime pays only in the case where he made a radical change, and he didn't prepare the thread, but he actually wove a garment. You know, he's got a shirt on his back. The Braisa insists that he's already made enough of a radical change to pass the shinui threshold when he's prepared the thread. And therefore, he was kona v'shinui. How do we reconcile the two? So that's what Abaye wants to come forward and try to make peace between the Mishnah and the
Braisa. Would you say the same thing as far as the gazlan who steals a pregnant cow and the cow dies in childbirth?
So then the gazlan would pay kishas hagzil for a different reason, not because of shinui, but simply because the object is completely gone from the world. Meaning, if you steal a live animal and it's dead,
crime
then for what do you say, Gershon?
Crime doesn't pay that.
Well, he doesn't gain anything by that, you know, because we caught him and we didn't give him a chance to take a false oath.
And he has nothing.
And he has to pay. And he has no profits in that case, right? He has no profits, right? Oh, I see what you're saying. Fakert, crime doesn't pay because he's going to take a loss. Right, he's going to take a loss. Wait, just let me think.
In other words, the pregnant cow is worth six, and he has to pay.
Right. Well, no, he doesn't take. He doesn't take a loss, but rather he pays exactly what the cow was worth at the time.
Sure.
He's
left with a profit.
Right. He's left without a profit, meaning he was hoping, he was banking on the fact that the pregnancy would be successful. He'd end up with a cash prize and a cash surplus because of the value of the calf. And there is no calf. Everything is gestarben. And therefore, he's left with paying kishas hagzil. Okay, now we get to Abaye. Omar Abaye. Okay, this is a little bit tough going here, but we'll try. Tana didan ketani shinui derabbanon dahadra v'kolshkein shinui deoraisa. Okay. Now, what Abaye is doing for us, a bunch of things he's doing for us, but first and foremost is he is introducing a brand new category of shinui, which is not recognized by the Torah, and that is called shinui derabbanan. Now, the chiddush of our Mishnah, says Abaye, let me just say one thing by way of introduction. What I'm going to say to you now is the product of a lot of hard work, but I'm sort of giving it to you assuming that you've also done that hard work. So I'm not just trying to spoon feed you, but this I find very meaningful for my understanding of the sugya. What's radical here about Abaye, and we have to be careful, is that normally a braisa is subsequent to a Mishnah, meaning in terms of chronological sequence, so to speak, the Mishnah comes before the Braisa. Don't take me seriously on that. I mean, I don't know if historically the Braisa came after the Mishnah came first, but conceptually, there's a sequence here. The Braisa is always there to embellish the Mishnah and go beyond the Mishnah. Again, why Rebbe decided Ad Kan, you know, to leave the Braisa out, that's always going to be an issue. What Abayi's doing for us here is something very, he's pulling a very fast move here. Or in baseball, we'd say he's throwing a curveball. You know, this is not something that we'd anticipate. The Mishnah is standing on the shoulders of the Braisa. That conceptually, it's the Braisa that came first, and the Mishnah breaks new ground to expand the scope of the Braisa. The Braisa is the limited, or the basic, the primary, and the Mishnah is coming to break new ground with a revolutionary idea. So the subject of the Braisa is what we call Shinui Do'oraisa. That's the basics. That's the primary. And that's called the Shinui Delo Hadra. Delo Hadra means it's an irreversible process. You take the raw material, in this case Eitzim, let's say, and you can say the same thing about wool, and you smoothen out by chipping off with whatever utensil you use those bumps in the bark of the wood and so forth and so on. There's no way you can resurrect the dead or reverse the process. That's an irreversible process. That's called the Shinui Delo Hadra, which means Shinui De'eno Chozer. That is your paradigm primary Shinui De'oraisa. And anything less than that would not be recognized by the Torah as a Shinui. That's the Braisa. Our Mishnah knows the Braisa. But our Mishnah wants to go beyond the Braisa. Our Mishnah wants to establish that you can do a less radical, less profound Shinui, and it still becomes a Shinui. The Gazan will still be Kona, albeit not the Oraisa, but Midrabbanan. And this really reflects what we call, it's a sugya in Yevamah, it's called Hefker Bezdin Hefker. That the Torah vested in the authority in the hands of Bezdin to control ownership. It's a very radical kind of concept. Meaning, technically, according to Torah law, the Gazlan can return this object. He has to return this object. There's no way he can get away without returning the object. Why? Because it's a Shinui Dehadra. This is not a Shinui. Why? Because the Shinui is not profound enough to cross the threshold, as we said before, of Shinui, because it's reversible. Okay, he took wood and he made it into a table. So what? Just unhinge the, take out the hinges and then the nails, and then you're left with the wood that he stole. Let him return the wood that he stole, and that's exactly what the Torah requires of him. Come along the Rabbanon, and they create a new concept called Shinui Derabbanon. We have to understand why they did such a thing. But the impact of it is that now the Gazlan is Kona something, which the Torah says he's not Kona. I often wonder, for example, if this Gazlan would go ahead and take these, take this table, give it to a woman, and say, Hare at mekudeshes li betabel zeh, would the Kedusha be valid? Well, the law of Kedusha requires that you give her something that's yours. Is it yours or is it not? If the Torah recognizes the Kinyan, that's called a Kinyan Doraisa Nicha. It's yours. For example, you took a raw piece of wood after it was cut from the from the ground and you planed it down, then I understand very well it's yours and you can be Mekadesh and Isha with it. She may ask you the question, where did you get these planes from? But the Kedusha will be valid. In the case of taking planed wood, it's already been planed, it's already at the level of shipui. Shipui has been done, and now the Gazan steals this Meshupa Neser, it's called in the Lashon of Shas, and he converts it into a constructed kli, a table, for example. In that case, it's not really his on a Torah level. He can still return the object because it's a Shinui Dehadra. Comes along at Mishnah and breaks new ground, recognizes a Shinui Dehadra, I'll call upon him, Midrabbanan. And I'm wondering out loud with you. Again, anyone who has any insights here, any sources to quote, please let me know. But I'm just thinking out of the box here. When the Rabbanan recognizes a Kinyan, does that make it his? Like, for example, the Gemara in Bava Metzia says that if an ownerless object falls from the heavens and it falls into a radius of 4 amos, that's called a Kinyan Dalet Amos. That's only a Kinyan Rabbanan. So if I remember correctly from my youth, Rav Yosef Engel was one of the Gedolim 100 years ago. He wonders what happens if a man was Kona with a Kinyan Dalet Amos and he gives the Kiddush and he gives that Kinyan to a woman as Kiddushin. Is she Mekudeshes? And he wants to suggest maybe she's Mekudeshes Midrabanan, but not Midaraisa. And what are the implications of that quasi-kedushin that's not here and not there? So I'm thinking about the same, you know, applying the same kind of reasoning. Or I'll tell you something even beyond that. What would be if the Rabbanan offered this kinyan of a Shinui Dahadra to the Gazlan, and the Gazlan says, thanks, but no thanks. I don't want this kid, for whatever reason. Again, we'll have to see if we can work that out. Does he have a right to say to the Rabbanan, look, I wasn't Kona on a total level. You want to offer me this option? Okay, it's an option. If it's in my benefit, let it be in my benefit. But if it doesn't work in my favor, I would rather not avail myself of that opportunity. In any event, we'll have to get into all these discussions at some point, but one thing is crystal clear from the sugya. There are two categories of shinui, and that's when Abai breaks new ground. There's something called the shinui ahadra, and there's something called the shinui delo hadra. The Torah recognizes shinui in a case of a shinui delo hadra. The Rabbanan expanded it to include even a shinui dahadra. So let's just now summarize the Braisa and the Gemara, and the Mishnah, excuse me. There's A, B, and C. A is the raw material of the wood as it exists in nature. B is the raw material after it's been planed, and now it's smooth. It's called a neser. And then the C, I take these nesarim, in plural, and I create a kli. So I took it from A to B and B to C. The Braisa is addressing a case where the Gazlan took it from A to B. The Mishnah is addressing a case where the Gazlan took it from B to C. The Gemara wasn't so smart in the Havamina. Before Abaye, the Gemara didn't realize this. The Gemara thought that in our Mishnah, the Gazlan took it from A all the way to C. Meaning he did two things. It was a two-stage process. Number one, he stole the raw material after it was cut down by Reuven, and now Shimon takes it and he smooths it out with his plane. Then he, Shimon, the Gazlan, builds it into a structure. He makes it into a table. So the Gemara asks, well, if the Mishnah says that he was Kona Vashinui because he made it into a table, apparently he wasn't Kona Vashinui when he did the Shifui. Because again, the Gemara in the Havamina thought he took it the full gamut from raw material A through Shifui up until including Kli. That's what Rashi, I think, means. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says, where was it? If I can find it, I'll be lucky, but he says the following. Yeah, Hachi Garcinon. How many lines is it down from the top?
I have
signs on. Oh,
it's equal to 5 lines down from the Gemara.
5 lines down from the Gemara. Okay, Hachi Garcinon. Omer Abai, Tana Didan, Tani Shin Drabanan. Eitzim, Asan Kalin. No. I'm more focused on the Havmin in just 1 second. Here it is. Rashi Dibra Maskil Mishalim Kishas Hagzela. This is the Havamina of the Gemara, before Abaye. And that's the second of the smaller, skinnier lines if you don't have Steinsachs, if you have the classic Gemara. And Rashi says, it's like, Masnisan Amai Noche Kelim Ubegodim. Why did Mishnah have to tell me he made it into Kelim Ubegodim? Ha Eino Chokakom. He's not going to, you know, put them together, you know, by knocking nails in them. Ad She Yishvam Tchila. Meaning, when you construct something, the premise of the Gemara is that first you make him into mishupim. Could you imagine again if you were out in maybe you know in the wilderness? You know, you take a raw piece of tree and build some sort of a hut with it. But that's not how we do it in urban centers, right? We first smoothen it down. So why did the Mishnah have to say that he made it into a kli? He was already kona v'shinui before he made it into the kli. And Rashi understood that there was a two-stage process here. And in stage number one, he did the act of shipui. At that point, already, according to the Braisa, he was kona v'shinui. So telling me that then he built it as a constructive thing, that's totally, totally irrelevant. It's superfluous. The answer is nain. There are two different scenarios. The Bryce is addressing the scenario where he made it up to Shifui. Then the Mishnah is talking about a case where he stole already Eitzim Meshupim, right? And if he stole already Eitzim Meshupim, what kind of radical change has he done if I compare the object as it were when it was stolen to the object as it is today after the Gazlan made his changes? It's a very limited kind of change. It's what's called a shinui dahadra. The Torah wouldn't recognize such a shinui as a shinui. It's the Rabbanon that classified this shinui as a shinui. But now look at the next line in the Gemara. The Gemara says the following. Right, Mikolshkein Shinui Dorais, and how much more so would the Mishnah recognize an irreversible Shinui, where you don't have the possibility of replacing it to its original state and dismantling it. Says Abaye Eitzim Vason Kalim, if he took wood and he made it into Kalim, be Eitzim Mishupim. That's the case of our Mishnah when he stole the Eitzim. What kind of Eitzim were they? They were already Meshupim. That's what he stole. Umayniyu, Ninu, what's that called? That's called Nisarim. Okay, the language of Nisarim are sort of boards. They've already been smooth. They've already been plain. The Shinui Dehada Libriyasohu. Even though he assembled from these Nisarim a Kli, but nevertheless he could disassemble? Is there such a word?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My wife always accuses me of making up English words. You know. He dismantled it or he disassembled it, right? So that's called Hadalibriyasahu. Di'iboy mashliflahu. Mashliflahu means he can rip it apart, so to speak. Be sholef, when you pull something out of something else, so he can pull out the links that link together the various pieces of the Nisara. Now watch this. Semer va'asan begadim b'semer tavui t'shinui dahadar libriyasohu t'ibai sasarle. Now this is a little bit strange, because until now, in comparing the Braisa and the Mishnah, the Gemara presented the Braisa in terms of what? Did we see the word tavui? No, we didn't see the word tavui. The word was libnam. In other words, there's something very odd going on over here. The Gemara, in being consistent, should have been written a little bit differently. Now, this is going to be the kasha of the Mefarshim here. I'll tell you who in just a minute, but it should have said, semer vasan begadim bitsemer meluban, that's already been subject to limun, and then he takes milubanim, you know, after they've been bleached, and then he converts it into cloth, right, into a beged, and that's something that shinui, right, that would be a shinui dahada libriyasa. And the question is, why does the Gemara mention tavui? So yeah, I don't want to confuse you, because I'm afraid that we'll spend too much time on this, so I'm just going to say it, you know, in a very abridged way. And if you caught it, that's good. If you didn't, it'll come up later on in the sugya anyway, so you'll get it later. The Gemara is now aware of a conclusion later on, namely that to be malabain the wool after it's removed from the back, that itself is not called a shinui. You have to go one step further. You have to not only clean it, but you have to what's called spin it. Is that
into a thread?
Right, make it into a thread. It's got to be spun thread. So even though it's not relevant to this sugya, the Gemara could have gotten away with the word maluba, but it's not correct al pi emes. Now, one of the famous achronim, which the Masifta loves to quote on Masechta Bava Kamma, is the Toras Chaim. So what I'm telling you over here is the Toras Chaim. The Toras Chaim says, that's his methodological premise, that very often the Gemara will say something that's not necessary in its place, but just to be okay with the final conclusion that's coming up later down the pipeline. You know, halacha lemaisa. Halacha lemaisa, in order to do a shinui, it's not enough to take the raw wool off the back of the sheep and just bleach it and clean it. You have to go one step further. You have to make it into threads. That's considered a major shinui. So the Gemara therefore mentions tavui here, threading, in its presentation. In any event, what did he steal? He already stole threads.
the shinui has already been accomplished, but he stole the threads, and now he weaves them into a garment. That's called the shinui dehada libriyasa. Why did he buy sasarle? If he wants, he can take it apart. In the Hebrew word for taking apart threads of a garment is called lifrom, like in the parasha of Mitzorah, right? There's a mitzvah called primas seir. Well, primas begod. Okay, primas begod. In any event, he can return it to the state of threads by just ripping it apart. And therefore it's called a shinui dehada libriyasa. And that itself, according to our Mishnah, is a shinui derabanan. The kolshken, how much more so, shinui deraisa, if he took a raw piece of wood and he made it into a mishupa, he did shipui, or he took tzemer and he made it into tavui, he took raw wool off the back of the sheep and he made it into threads, deraisa, that's a radical change. That's called a shinui de lo hadra vitana bra, and that's what the Braisa wants to address, the case where he stole raw, you know, material and he made it into shipui, raw etzim. Shinui de oraisa ktoni, that's already a shinui de lo hadra. Vishinui de rabbana lo ktoni, he doesn't address the case of a shinui de rabbana. That's Abai. And then we get to Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi Omar, Tana Didan Nami Shinui Doraisa Ketoni. Our Mishnah is also of the opinion that we're dealing with only Shinui Doraisa. We don't recognize the ability of a Gazla and the possibility of his being Kone with a Shinui Hachozer Libriyaso, which is a reversible Shinui. In other words, Rav Ashi is not willing to grant Abai that premise that our Mishnah recognizes and focuses on presenting a Shinui Drabbanan. There is no such thing as Shinui Drabbanan right now, says Rav Ashi. That's not in the radar screen of the Mishnah. Tana Didan Nami Shinui Doraisa Ketoni. There's no stira between our Mishnah and the Braisa because the subject of both is Shinui Doraisa, but as we'll see, in different cases and in different scenarios. Okay, now what would be in our Mishnah a Shinui She'eno Chozer, which would be a Shinui Doraisa? Says Rav Ashi, when it says Eitzim Vasan Kelim, what we're talking about is Buchanei, Dahainu Shifan. In other words, we have to know what qualifies as shipui. And it all depends on what you're really creating. If you're creating just, you know, smoothing out a piece of wood to make it into a nesa, to a board that you're going to use for construction, that's not shinui. We're talking about a different process, a process of creating buchni. Now, what's buchni? Buchni is called a machteshes. Machteshes, if you remember the old druggists, you know, before we had modern drugstores where you go in and you buy a pill, what they used to do is they used to put something, you know, different chemicals or herbs into a kli, and then they would grind it down. That's called shchika samamonim, if you're familiar with that phrase. Again, barring from Hilchos Shabbos. Now, the machteshes itself, meaning, what's it called?
Mortar and a pestle.
Pestle? So the pestle is the stick?
No, mortar.
Yeah, the two of them are mortar and pestle. Which is which?
All right. So I'm not sure which is which, but anyway, the buchni is the makel hamachteshes. That's the hammer. Yeah, okay, we'll call it a hammer, thank you, that you use to crush it. And once you do that, that's called a shinui doraisa, which means a shinui she'eno chozer. And in that case, you don't need shipui in the classical shipui, meaning you could take actually a raw material tree, a piece of tree from the tree, and if you chop away at it, you know, with whittle it down with a knife or so, you can create this buchani. And that's enough of a shipui to
soften the wood or shape or give a shape to this wood that it can serve its function as a buchani. Okay, that's called Enoch Chosel B'yosef. Give me just 1 minute because I'm not sure I understand what I just said. Okay, but Semer Vason B'godim Nimte. Okay, that's something that again obviates or circumvents the need for libur, and it creates a shinui delo hadar. Okay, now what is the Mishnah talking about? That's the Mishnah. What is the Brisa talking about? The Brisa is talking about not the cases of buchni or nimte or namte, which we'll get to in a minute, but classical cases of creating the sarim or creating a tavui situation which require shipui and something that goes beyond libun. In other words, basically Rav Ashi's approach is to accept the following premise, that our Mishnah is dealing exclusively with what kind of shinui? Shinui she'eno chozer, which is a shinui d'oraisa. And if that be the case, then your classical shibui would not be enough because it's too early in the stage, too early of a stage to create the final product. Our Mishnah is talking about a unique final product which circumvents the need for shibui. So let me just read to you one line and then Yechiel, the floor is yours. He says the following. Ein stira bein a Mishnah labraisa. There's no contradiction in the Mishnah braisa according to Rav Ashi. Both are talking about the shinui of shipui, but lefi a Mishnah shinui shel libun kone a Mishnah b'daberes b'tzemer shel lo nase bo libun. Ah, okay. So let's see if we can look at Rashi here. Dibra Maskel Nami Shini Doraisa. You have it, it's about halfway down the page. Shini Doraisa Lo Hadar Ktani. Aval Shini Durabanan Lo Kani. Interesting. Rashi says that according to Rav Ashi, our Mishnah rejects the concept of Shini Durabanan. No, so you'll ask me, why is Shipui in the case of the Braisa sufficient? And Libun in the case of Shearings in the Braisa sufficient? Whereas here, in our Mishnah, it's not enough. The answer is because our Mishnah is talking about a Mitzias where he doesn't do neither Shipui nor Libun. He is creating object X, and that's his objective, and in that context, he doesn't need neither Shipui nor Libun. In the case of Eitzim, Vasan, Kalim, he's talking about what kind of Kli? A Buchane. And a Buchane completely obviates the need for Shipui. And he can simply shape in the wood without having to actually cut into it, so to speak, with a plane and smoothen it out. And therefore, he doesn't need shipui. Shipui itself, according to as the Brisa says, would also, in a classical case, constitute a shinui she'eino chozer shinui d'oraisa, but he doesn't have to do it. Yeah, you feel.
No, I didn't have anything to say. I just wanted to ask you to define the word buchni. Are you talking about the buchni is actually the what was it? The mortar?
Or you mortar. Buchni, I thought it was called a pestle, but whatever, you could call it a mortar or whatever.
Or is buchni the wood?
Does anybody have an art scroll? No?
Right here.
You have an art scroll? Well, how does he translate buchani? I thought it was called a pestle, but maybe it's called.
I'm just trying to understand. Yeah. Is it the kli that I'm doing?
No.
Or is it the wood itself after the.
Yeah. My objective, my purpose is to take wood and create this thing called a buchani, and in so doing, I don't need sheepwood.
I use a machtesh to do it. No,
what I'm saying is that this buchani, which is my ultimate goal, is called a machteshes. It's called the makel of a machteshes. Machteshes is the bowl, and the makel is the wood. I am taking raw wood and making it into this makel. It has to have a certain shape to it. So I create the shape out of raw wood, and I don't need shipui in this case. So I completely skip the stage of shipui.
What are you creating?
I'm creating something called a buchani. What's it called in English, Alan?
Still looking for it here.
So you're saying that is this a specific case or an example of anything where I'm making a functional object that doesn't require...
So Mishnah wants to give me an option of stealing something. something. Creating a shini she'eino chozer, which is shini deraisa, without having to do shifu. See, according to Abaye, there was no such option. Abaye felt that in our Mishnah, he's taking something that already was, he stole something that was already subject to shifu, and he upgraded it to a kli. And in so doing, the Braisa was addressing taking the raw material, making it into a shipui, and that's called the Shini Sheinu Chozu, which is a Shini Daraisa. The Mishnah is adding a Shini Darabanon, which means a Shini Achozer, when he took something that was already at the level, at the stage of shipui, and he brought it to the level of Kelim. And even though that's a Shini Achozer, the Mishnah is breaking new ground and recognizing the existence of a Shini Darabanon. Okay? That's according to whom? That's according to Abaye. What Rav Ashi wants to do is he wants to avoid this whole business. Who said, you know, what birdie whispered it to you, that the Mishnah broke new ground and created a Shinu She'eino Chozer? Excuse me, a Shinu Achozer, which is recognized the Rabbanon as a Shinu? No. I can tell you that you can arrive at the stage of creating a Shipui, which is a Shinu She'eino Chozer, even without Shipui. That's what the Mishnah is addressing. The Mishnah is talking about a case where he takes the raw Eitzim and without doing Shinui, he creates a Shinui. I'm sorry. Without doing Shipui, I meant to say, he creates a Shinui. And that's called Buchni. Or in the case of wool, it's called what? Namti. So you're telling me Buchni he calls what? A vessel?
Pestle.
Oh, pestle. Oh, that's what I said. Okay, so I wasn't far off. Or maybe we're both wrong, but at least I'm not the only one who's wrong.
He says,
oh, I see. Very good. Excellent. In this case, it pays to make it into a pestle because he's kona with a shinui, right? Crime pays. And then you have something called a namte. Now, a namte, I understand, is something called fibers that are pressed together.
Felt.
What's it called? Felt? Excellent. Felt.
Felt.
So now... So, Rashi used the word felt?
Yeah, in French.
Oh, in French. Very good. Let's see it inside.
Felt here.
Okay, it's felt. Velaz. The ain malabdin also tzemer. In other words, you can create this thing called a felt piece of cloth, I guess, even circumventing libun. Seinach Hinami, the Bryce is right that libun is a shini sheinu chozer. And Rav Ashi is right that in our Mishnah he never even bothered to subject this wool or the shearing to libun. And yet, he can create a shinu sheinu chozer by making out of this tzemer something called felt, which ain't malabdin also. You don't even need libun. So again, you know, we can get caught up in all the physiological, biological details here, but suffice it to say that the machlokas here between Rav Ashi and Abaye is that whereas Abaye wants to introduce the concept of shini hachozer as a recognized shini derabbanon, Rav Ashi avoids it entirely. And he says there's no stira between the Braisa and the Mishnah because it all depends on what he's creating. In a normal case, if he's creating the Sarim, then he needs Shipui, and Shipui becomes a Shinui de Lo Hadra, and it's a Shini de Raisa. You can have a Shini de Lo Hadra even without creating Shipui in a different scenario, in someone who's creating Buchni. Buchni is a kli that can be fashioned as an irreversible Shini without having to subject it to Shini. And the same thing applies in the case of
when the Gemara says Hainu Shipan, it doesn't mean the Hainu Shipan.
Hainu Shipan, it's a replacement for Shipan. Correct.
Okay.
Hainu Shipan. In other words, Dailo, he says here in the Masifti, Dailo Behachlokas Ha'etz. You know, he just has to chip away at this piece of wood. The Eino Tzorech, he uses the word instead of Shipui, Chakika. I'm not sure exactly why he changes it to the word Chakika. Okay, Rabosei, we'll dive in. We'll have Mincha now. What time is it now?
1:17.
Okay, so hopefully we're going to have Mincha. Please keep in mind that on Thursday, in order to complete what we did today, we must see a sugya on the top of Tzadi Dalid Amid Beis. Okay, then line 2 on Tzadi Dalid Amid Beis. That's going to complete the sugya that we started today.
Can it continue tomorrow?
No, on Wednesday. What's today?
Tuesday.
On Thursday. Tomorrow we're learning Masechta Nida.
So what do you learn? When do you learn Baba Kama?